This video is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Switching to Mint Mobile is the easiest way to save in 2024. Wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan to get this new offer. Go to mintmobile.com/Merle. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The News with Dan. We've got a lot of exciting stuff to talk about. Barbie and some questions about whether it's the Oscar frontrunner that many people, including myself, have assumed it will be. We're going to look at the BAFTA nominations and some other industry buzz, as well as an interview with a fellow movie YouTuber. Sean Chandler will be joining me to talk about the upcoming Oscar nominations. I'll also be taking your calls from the Mint Mobile hotline. We have some great people that called in and asked some questions this week, and a little bit about some headlines in the world of film criticism as well. But let's jump first of all to Barbie and the BAFTA Awards. If you don't know what the BAFTAs are, they're Britain's equivalent, I guess, of the Academy Awards, the BAFTA Film Awards. And while they do have a reputation as one of the big precursors, I guess they're called, to the Academy Awards, it's not necessarily a one-to-one type thing because it is based in the UK. The culture there is a bit different. There are movies that are big here that aren't as big there and vice versa. But it is still a bit of a legitimizing factor when it comes to a lot of movies. And when the BAFTAs were announced yesterday, Oppenheimer had the most nominations of any film with 13, followed by Poor Things, which had 11 nominations, and then Killers of the Flower Moon and The Zone of Interest, which both tied for 9 nominations for third most. Barbie did come away with 5 nominations, but the thing that people were buzzing about was that it did not land a nomination in either the Best Film race or, perhaps more surprisingly, the Best Director race for Greta Gerwig. And when you combine that with some buzz, including Variety's own awards reporting, which stated that sources inside the Academy are cooling a bit on Barbie, are dismissive of the movie potentially, and that Greta Gerwig's shots at getting a Best Director nomination are less than 50-50. As a matter of fact, Clayton Davis, who does Variety's awards reporting, has Greta Gerwig out right now of the Best Director race. It does raise the question of whether these BAFTA nominations, combined with some of this other buzz, could lead to a potential upsetting day for Barbie when Oscar nominations are announced next week. Now, I think it's still going to get a lot, but I said, I think on this show last week, that I think that Barbie would get the second most nominations out of any movie this year. Is it possible that it will instead be on the snub list for a lot of people? Well, first of all, let's look at what the BAFTAs are and how they determine their results. And that's why it kind of furthers my opinion that the BAFTAs aren't necessarily a major predictor of the Academy Awards, because not only are they based over in the UK, the nominees also aren't determined the same way that the Academy does theirs, or really anybody does theirs, for the last few years after they took steps to sort of revise and overhaul their voting system. For example, while the BAFTA voters all weigh in on the best performance categories, only the top 3 performances as far as total votes end up getting automatic BAFTA nominations, and the other 3 performances in those categories are picked by a juried panel. So it's a combination of BAFTA votes and jury votes. And when it comes to the Best Director race, the race that Greta Gerwig was not included in, the top 2 picks of the BAFTA voters are automatically nominated, and then the remaining 4 nominees are picked by the jury. So if Greta Gerwig was not one of the top 2 vote getters from the BAFTA voters at large when it came time for nominations, it's possible that the jury that was selected just didn't select her as one of the remaining nominees. That doesn't necessarily mean that she had a weak showing among BAFTA voters overall. That's why, like I say, the waters are a little bit murky here. Now, Barbie's exclusion in the Best Film race is down to the BAFTA voters who were putting up the nomination votes, because that does go to the entire voting body. But Greta Gerwig and Barbie's exclusions weren't the only eyebrow-raising exclusions from the nominees yesterday. For example, while Killers of the Flower Moon picked up 9 nominations, both Lily Gladstone and Martin Scorsese were overlooked in their respective categories. Poor Things had the second most nominations, but Yorgos Lanthimos wasn't nominated for Best Director. All of Us Strangers landed a supporting actor nomination for Paul Mescal, but not a Best Actor nomination for Andrew Scott, who's seen as a Dark Horse Oscar contender. And when you look at the BAFTA winners, they also often don't have a huge overlap with the Academy Awards, especially in recent years. For example, last year, none of the major winners for the performance categories for Best Picture or for Best Director overlapped at all with the Academy Awards. When it came time to hand out trophies, the BAFTA practically ignored Everything Everywhere All at Once, and it went on to sweep the Oscars. And just a couple years ago, Coda, which won the Academy Award for Best Picture, wasn't even nominated for Best Picture at the BAFTAs. So I do think that people maybe put a little bit too much stock in the BAFTA nominations, and perhaps the BAFTAs themselves, when it comes to how much they're going to predict the Academy Awards. Perhaps it speaks a little bit to the psychology. For example, Emma Stone winning the Critics' Choice Award for Best Actress was a surprise, given that Lily Gladstone had been dominant in that race pretty much the entire award season. You could combine that with her exclusion from the BAFTAs to perhaps speculate that enthusiasm for her might be cooling, but at the same time, you could also point to so many other cases where that's not necessarily what ends up happening. I don't think that there were any big game changers, but I do think that it puts a few things on my radar, and really more importantly to me, more so than Barbie perhaps being left out of Best Picture, I still think that's practically a lock. It does raise a lot more questions in my mind about whether Greta Gerwig is going to get the Best Director nomination. I had pretty much in my brain just assumed that that was going to happen, but the cumulative effects of the reporting that have been going on and her not getting the BAFTA nomination do have me questioning whether or not she will get that nomination now. And you can actually stay tuned right here on the channel, because this weekend I'll be putting up my annual special where I pick my own personal choices, if I were the Academy, who I would nominate in the major races. And I will also be predicting who I think will actually get those nominations. Will Greta Gerwig be amongst that group on Best Director? You'll have to tune in and see. But to talk more about this race and about award season and about who we want to see do well at the Oscars, I'm really happy to bring in a fellow movie YouTuber, and I want to start bringing more people here on the channel. He's somebody that's been around longer than I have on an individual basis. I've seen his videos pop up so many times over the years, and it was great to have a chance to talk to him. Here's a conversation I had with Sean Chandler about the Oscars race. I am here with another person in the YouTube movie community. I was just saying, we should all start talking to each other more. And this is a guy who has the hustle, everything. He's done it all. He's been around forever. Sean Chandler, thank you so much for joining me to talk about the Oscars.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I love to talk movies way too much, and it's even more fun when I have someone to talk with that actually is as excited to talk about movies as I am.
We're about a week away from the Oscar nominations. I still get jazzed about the awards just because I think it's interesting. I don't think that it means that a movie is great or not great. But I don't know. Maybe it's because I've always tracked it when I was a kid. What do you think about the Oscars and this whole awards thing?
Well, I feel like they kind of go through phases to where they kind of head down some strange streams. And sometimes they feel a little bit more detached from normal people. Other times they realize they do that and they kind of drift back a little bit. And so some years, like I've even, as someone that talks about movies full time for a living, movies get nominated. I'm like, which one's that one again? Like, I don't even know. But the years where it feels pretty balanced in what's getting nominated, and you have small things and you have big things, then I go, yes, this feels like this is a celebration of all of cinema, where you have popular cinema, you have foreign cinema, you have art house, all of it kind of combined. That's when it feels like it does it right, and I can get really excited about that. And sometimes I'll discover something I might not have watched otherwise, but because it got nominated, I go, oh, I want to see all the best pictures, and I discover something cool in the process. That's kind of the way I normally kind of come into it.
Well, this year looks like it's going to be one of those hybrid years, because, you know, I was totaling up on the channel last week, and it seems like the two movies that will likely have the most or close to the most nominations are Barbie and Oppenheimer, two very big box office hits this past year. And then a lot of, as you were mentioning, the smaller films as well.
Even looking at those kind of two front runners, these are two wildly different movies. And both of them were critically praised. Both of them were interesting in their own ways, but they also made a lot of money. And you have Oppenheimer that feels like a pretty traditional Best Picture nominee, a massive ensemble cast of fantastic actors from an actor or a director that everybody loves, and tackling historic events that are very emotionally resonant, classic Best Picture kind of film. And then you have Barbie, something that just feels like, well, we've never really seen that before. And it's in a sense so mainstream because it's Barbie and very funny, but also with the way that it handled it, the amount of thematic exploration, it's also unique in its own way.
Well, I was reading one of those Variety articles. I believe it was Variety. And, you know, always take these with a grain of salt. But it wasn't one of those where, like, we talk to one, all those we talk to one Oscar voter articles. It's like they find the most bitter, out-of-touch person in the Academy and then elevate their viewpoint as if it was everybody's. But this was actually an article that according to Variety, was quoting many sources in the Academy. And a couple of takeaways that I thought were interesting. Number one, they said the buzz that they're hearing is that Saltburn is really closing the gap as it's hit streaming around the holidays and it's gotten more of a high profile.
Interesting.
The one that surprised me, it said that talking to people in the Academy, they believe that Greta Gerwig's chances of getting a Best Director nomination were no better than 50-50. I have a hard time believing that. I really do. The unholy storm, I think, that would be unleashed if Greta Gerwig did not get nominated for Barbie. That's what kind of makes me go like, really? Like, I find that difficult to believe. I really do. Not just because she's been nominated a lot, but because, you know, and listen, I liked Barbie. I didn't love Barbie in the way that a lot of other people loved Barbie, but even I have to, when I look at the five best directors for my own personal choices, what she did with that movie stylistically, with the actors, just with cracking that whole concept and how to portray that, I think it is deservedly in the top five. Some people would say that she's just there, you know, because they want to make a statement or whatever, but I think that she should be in there. And I would be absolutely shocked if she was not nominated for Best Director.
She's a director that has had that prestige buzz surrounding her all along. Mm-hmm. She makes a movie that gets both critical and commercial success. And kind of like you, I have my own criticisms of the film. And I was much lower on it than most people. But it's the sort of movie that you have to respect what it did. You have to respect how much it influenced people and impacted people. And not just because it was funny and had songs in it. It's a movie that resonated with people, that had a lot to it. And I think the direction is really what pulls it together, even more so than the screenplay.
Just the idea of being able to take that concept and turn it into what it is, I think that is deserving of recognition. So that really kind of made me pause to be like, you know, who are you talking to? Because apparently they said that the people they talked to said, oh, well, it's just a Barbie movie, which to me, whether you liked it or not, to dismiss it like that, you almost can't have seen it. You can't have seen it.
Right.
If you could wave your movie magic wand, you could guarantee one, you know, let's say major nomination. So a director, a lead actor or lead actress, let's say. Or a best picture. You could wave your magic wand and guarantee that somebody's going to get nominated. Who would be your pick? What would be your pick?
I would go for the Zac Efron actor one. Because there's all the people we know that are going to get nominated. There's 3-4 people that are pretty obviously going to get the nomination. And like, I mean, I desperately want Nolan to win best director, but I don't think he needs my magic wand to be in that conversation. He's in that conversation. And I just thought the Iron Claw was so good. And it's one of those ones where you have this guy that was probably written off for a long time because he was so good looking and was such a heartthrob. But then he puts in a performance that is just so heartbreaking. And you, the last couple of lines in that movie, the final little scene in there, that's the most emotionally resonant moment. And it's like two simple lines. And it's really carried by his performance to have the most, for me, emotionally resonant, potent 30 seconds in a movie, and it's just him breaking down, talking to his child.
Simple
lines. And so that's the one for me that I would love to see Zac Efron, and I think he does need my magic wand to get in there.
A24 did not do the Iron Claw any favors this award season. They got the screeners out so late. You know, the voting deadlines are early for so many different guilds now, and you know, Iron Claw was a movie that I very much wanted to see, and I think 2 or 3 voting deadlines had passed by before I even had a chance to see it. And I don't mean in theaters.
Same
I mean
me.
When they got it to critics to review for awards consideration.
Yeah, that's kind of my best guess as to why it feels kind of dead on arrival in award season is everyone else sent me stuff way early. You know, Netflix, beginning of February, for like 6 weeks straight, every single day, like, what new movie is Netflix sending
me? Netflix will send the actors to your house to act it out for you if you ask them to. You know? Right. They'll get it in front of everybody.
I've got my amazing Naiad water bottle right over here. And just all the, like, such elaborate packages. Yeah. And I didn't see the Iron Claw until 2 weeks after I had to nominate things. It's just so potent. It resonates on such a human level, and we couldn't see it until I would have nominated it in so many categories. I would have voted for it in so many categories, and I couldn't because I hadn't seen it.
Kind of the opposite side of things. What would be the one, whatever you want to call it, omission, snub, etc.? If it were, you know, come Oscar nomination morning, they announce everything. What would be the one, if it's not included, that would be a real heartbreaker for you?
I want Nolan to have an amazing night. I want Oppenheimer to have a great night. I want that story. Sometimes that side to it, if you love that, those stories that tie to the journey, that it's not just the actual work that they did, but also what that win means in the grander scheme of things. So it's a boring pick to say Oppenheimer, Nolan.
It's not, though, because, you know, Nolan for me is a director that I've always been in awe of his filmmaking ability. I've been a little more hit or miss on some of his movies. I've respected them and respected the craft of every single one of them. I felt like narratively they weren't necessarily all hitting on all cylinders. But for me, if he were to win for this, I would be very happy because I think he's one of the best directors working today. And I personally think this is his best movie. I would be happy for him to win because not only do I think that he's one of the better directors working, I think that for him to win for what I think is his best movie and not have to wait 10 or 15 or 20 years and win for a good movie, but, you know, really,
yeah,
it's for that one, you know.
Right. Jamie Lee Curtis, the lifetime achievement win for Nolan. Like, this is the moment it should happen.
Well, I mean, you know, he's the odds-on favorite, but listen, the Oscars are weird. You never know what's going to happen. I remember, I think the first year on the channel that I did Oscar reactions was the year that we got to the end of the nominations. And Mara said, she's like, can you believe it? I'm like, what? She's like, Denis Villeneuve. And I'm like, what? He got nominated. And then I had to stop and go like, he didn't for the first Dune film. And, you know, that still blows my mind. So you never know what's going to happen. That's what I like. It's going to keep us on the edge of our seats.
Well, that's for me. This is the first year that I've been in a critics group to get screeners to bit like really feel ahead of the conversation. That's the more fun side of this. Like, recommending that you go see a good Marvel movie isn't interesting because they were already going to go see a new Marvel movie.
Yeah.
But that's the on-ramp to the channel to where I can be like, yeah, but if you like sports dramas, you got to see The Iron Claw. Mm-hmm. If you just like good family dramas, you got to see The Iron Claw. Like, oh, I know you don't see a lot of foreign films. Godzilla Minus One.
Yes.
It's just a great movie that happens to have Godzilla in it.
Right.
And when you can recommend those and send, even a couple of days ago, I sent like a birthday text to someone and like, happy birthday. And the guy responds like, yeah, I'm going to the movies for my birthday. I'm going to go see Godzilla Minus One. I wouldn't have gone to go see it if you hadn't mentioned it. That's the fun stuff.
I love hearing that. That's my favorite when somebody says, I went and saw this movie because you said I should go see it and I loved it. I'm like, that's what we're here for. At least as far as I'm concerned, that's what we're here for. We're here to help you find your favorite movies that you just don't know about yet.
Yes. Take that next step deeper into filmdom.
Exactly. So Sean, you're on YouTube, Sean Chandler. Also, MegaCon pretty soon, right?
Yes.
In Orlando.
Coming up in just a couple weeks. Yeah, I'll be at MegaCon all 4 days. We've got multiple panels scheduled throughout those days. I'll have a bunch of my YouTube friends with me doing meet and greets every day. It's always so much fun. We try to do the creator stage I'm on. It's like a mini YouTube convention to like have several of us finally get together in person. But then just meeting people. Meeting fans. Like, you go in the comment section and it's the Twitter, it's like the wild, wild west of insanity. Every time you talk to a movie fan in person, everyone's so nice, wonderful. It's great conversations with people that love movies the way that I do.
So that was always my favorite. Yeah, when we would go to Comic-Con and stuff in the years past, that was always my favorite, was getting to meet the actual people that are watching your show and the stuff that you do. I might have to sign up for that MegaCon mailing list. That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, catch Sean at MegaCon in Orlando, February 1st to the 4th, and on his YouTube channel. Sean Chandler, thanks so much for joining me here on the channel. I appreciate it, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. This has been an absolute blast, and I was honored to be asked.
Thanks to Sean for coming on and having a talk. Be sure to check out his channel and check him out in Orlando at MegaCon in just a couple weeks. Before we move on to our next news story, let's take a few questions from you and the Mint Mobile Hotline. It's a great addition to the channel. I've loved hearing what people have asked across so many different fields of interest. And, you know, for every call that you hear here on the channel, I'm telling you, I've got 20 that you're not able to hear just because I don't have time. So please keep calling because I love these questions. By the way, if you want to call the Mint Mobile hotline, you can give it a call at +1-323-863-3311. And our first question is from Aaron in Minneapolis.
Hi, Dan. This is Aaron Brody from the currently frigid north of Minneapolis, Minnesota. My question to you is, when you go to a movie theater, where in the theater do you like to sit? And why?
Thanks so much for that call, Aaron. And he actually had some very kind words to say after his question was over. And I really appreciate that. This is a question that a lot of people get asked. I mean, I remember reading Roger Ebert always said to sit twice as far back as the screen is wide. And that's how he always liked to pick his seat at a movie theater. I generally, it's weird. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm right-handed. But I generally tend to list a little bit toward, if you're walking up the stairs, I guess facing the back of the auditorium, I generally tend to be not all the way to the right, but toward the right. I don't like to be dead center necessarily. I like to be a little bit to the right. I can't really explain why that is. And I also generally try to find a seat where the screen fills my field of vision. I generally want to find that sweet spot where if I'm looking at the screen without really having to move my eyes across the screen, I can get a good idea of what the picture is. And then of course I can focus on different points if I want to. So I would say a little bit farther than halfway back and a bit towards the right hand side of the theater as you're going up the stairs is generally where I like to sit for whatever reason. Our next question is from Courtney in Riverside, California.
Hi, Dan. This is Courtney from Riverside, California. And my question is regarding film festivals. Since Sundance is kicking off this week, I'm wondering if you will be virtually attending and covering what you see. And additionally, are there any other film festivals that you would love to attend in the future? Thanks for always being my number one movie guy, and a belated congratulations to you and Mara.
Hey, Courtney, thanks so much for that call. And yes, I will be attending Sundance virtually this week. They changed things around. I got so spoiled the first year that I covered Sundance. They had to change it at the last minute from an in-person festival to a completely online festival due to COVID, which meant that you could watch everything at home. They have scaled that back over the years. And so we're getting about, I think, half of the program that you can watch at home online. And while the festival starts, actually has started already, we don't actually get to start watching movies until, I believe, Friday is the first day, or Thursday, as far as the virtual component of the festival. So I have to wait a few days to see a lot of these movies, and I don't get the full selection, but I have my package. I already booked the online 10 movies that I'm going to see. I could change those around if I see things getting some buzz. Maybe I'll be able to buy some tickets for the prize winners at the end of the weekend, if I'm lucky. But yes, I'm looking forward to covering what I can cover virtually, and I would love to cover film festivals in person. Sundance would be at the top of my list. Of course, the Cannes Film Festival would be a dream. It's a dream for any, I think, huge film fan maybe to just once be able to go to the Cannes Film Festival. I think there's a couple things that really hold me back from doing it in person. Number one, obviously the expense. It's very expensive to travel and cover a film festival and find lodging and all of that stuff. And the other thing is it's a bit intimidating because these festivals have been around for so long. And there are people that have been going every single year for so long that know the system and they know everything. They know where to go and who to talk to and when to get your tickets and when to show up. And I wouldn't know any of that stuff. And so it intimidates me a little bit because I feel like I would be totally lost and I wouldn't know what to do. And I'd miss out on stuff I wanted to do because I wouldn't know where to be. So I might need like a bit of a, you know, I might need to be someone's Padawan who's been covering film festivals a lot, because those are the things that I just don't know. But yeah, Sundance and Cannes would be the first couple. I mean, Toronto would be great. Going down to Austin and covering some of those film festivals would be great. But it is really about sort of freeing up the budget and also making sure that I can actually make the most of my time there. Our next call is from Jeff in the great state of Georgia.
Hey, Dan, this is Jeff. I'm from Georgia, and I was wondering if you could talk about the announcement from Disney that they were going to be laying off a good chunk of Pixar employees. I was just wondering why they would announce this. It was supposedly up to 20% of Pixar was going to get laid off in the second half of the year. Why would they publicly announce this so soon? Should Disney just sell Pixar at this point, or did Pixar look for another owner to give them a better chance at success? I was wondering to get your thoughts on this. Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for that call. And I looked into this a little bit, and it's not necessarily that Disney announced that there would be layoffs at Pixar. There was a tech outlet called TechCrunch that had somebody probably leak to them, or they were able to report investigatively that layoffs were coming later this year. And they approached Pixar to confirm the story, and Pixar basically confirmed it when confronted with the information, because once a reporter calls you and says, hey, somebody said that there's going to be layoffs at your company, is that true? You can either confirm it, or I guess you could lie and say no, or you could say no comment. But the whole 20% thing, that 20% of Pixar's workforce is going to be laid off, Pixar denies that. They said that that is too high a number. They say that there's really not a number on it yet because they're still working on a lot of projects. And other sources in the same article claimed that a lot of the layoffs were staff that were added to Pixar's workforce by Disney when they started doing more streaming. And so this is basically a contraction of the workforce that partially reflects the additions to the workforce when they were just pouring money into the streaming side of the business. But we don't yet know when that's going to be. We only know that it's going to happen later this year. And the article sources also said that this is essentially a delayed version of what Disney already did last year. There were so many Disney layoffs because of Pixar's workflow and the fact that they're working ahead a year or 2 years on projects. This is essentially a time delayed version of those layoffs that happened at Disney. And finally, Jeff, your question about should Disney sell Pixar? I don't necessarily think so. I don't really know who else could own Pixar that would give them as much of a chance to succeed as they already do. The brand is so tied into Disney. I mean, they were at one time owned by Steve Jobs, so you could say, well, Apple should buy them. But I just think that you don't really need to sell the whole division. You just have to give them room to do their work. And I think that's what Disney hasn't been doing. Give them room to do their work, exercise quality control at Pixar as Disney is now doing at every other division, hopefully, and maybe things will eventually correct themselves. Our last call comes from Rebecca in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hi, Dan. This is Rebecca from St. Paul, Minnesota, and I love your videos. I listen to them while I'm doing really boring chores, so thank you for entertaining me and helping me through that. I wanted to ask you a question that was about the comment that director Bong Joon-ho made in the Oscars acceptance speech for Parasite, where he said that he hoped that more people would overcome the one-inch-tall barrier of subtitles to be introduced to more films. And I was curious, as somebody who knows a lot about box office numbers, if you think that that comment has made any difference, or if there is a general trend in American moviegoers to be more accepting of subtitles these days. I'm really interested in your thoughts. Thank you.
Thanks so much for that call, Rebecca. Yeah, Bong Joon-ho's statement about that one-inch barrier with subtitles is one of my favorite statements from a director or anybody about film ever. And it is so true. There are people that shun some of the best movies ever made because they're in a different language. And people say, well, I don't want to read. I don't want to read the whole movie. As far as an increasing tolerance from Americans for subtitles, I actually think there is. And there's research to back that up. A lot of millennials, my age and younger, then going down to Gen Z and down the ladder, are watching everything with subtitles on. You go onto TikTok, almost everything has a subtitle now. A lot of people watch everything at home on the streaming services with the subtitles on. I know that we do here in the house. A lot of it is because of how they mix movies now, and a lot of it is because you're definitely not going to miss a line of dialogue that way. So yes, I think there's absolutely an increased tolerance for subtitles everywhere. And I also think that the lines are blurring between where a movie is made and whether people can appreciate it. Look at Godzilla Minus One. That was not dubbed, I think, in the majority of American markets. I don't even know if they released a dubbed version of that film here. It was subtitled. And so many people went to see it subtitled. And we're seeing anime succeeding in the theatrical marketplace here. There's a dubbed version, but also a subbed version. The same with Studio Ghibli. Had one of the biggest openings in the history of the studio. Again, dubbed and subtitled. I think that as culture evolves, and honestly, as the world shrinks when it comes to the availability of media, there's less of a stigma when it comes to subtitles and subtitled international films. And I think that that's a great thing. I hope that means that more people are opening themselves up to the magic of international cinema, because it's just as magical as any movie made in Hollywood or anywhere else. Some of my favorite movies in the last 5 to 10 years and beyond have been international films. Thanks to everybody that called in on the Mint Mobile hotline. And of course, I want to thank the people who make the Mint Mobile hotline possible, Mint Mobile. We're over halfway through January, and how are those New Year's resolutions looking? I know they can be a real pain, but you know what's never a hassle? Saving money. And for a limited time, all wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Think about what you're paying for mobile service right now. If you're not with Mint, I can just about guarantee you it's more than $15. Now think of what you could do with all that money that you'd be saving. Maybe enough to buy those new running shoes, because that's definitely the thing holding you back from working out every day, right? You can say goodbye to that unpleasant surprise when you see just how much your service provider is really charging you, because at Mint, all plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring over your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Merle. That's mintmobile.com/Merle. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Merle. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. All right, so before we wrap up, I want to talk about the most relatable and important news story of this entire show, a conflict between two critics groups in Hollywood. I know it's truly something that should be headline news. Actually, I wanted to talk about it because these are both groups that I have been involved in, and I saw some people asking me about it. I saw my name being bandied about as people were discussing this online, so I wanted to address it briefly. It involves two groups that I have been a member of for many years now, the Critics Choice Association, who runs the Critics Choice Awards, and the Hollywood Creative Alliance, formerly the Hollywood Critics Association. And there were some stories that hit the trades a couple of days ago regarding Critics Choice and the HCA. I actually received an email a couple nights ago saying that if you were a member of Critics Choice and also a member of HCA, that in order to remain in Critics Choice, the CCA, you had to resign from HCA. This is what Critics Choice said, quote, "We have evidence that a representative of the HCA has improperly suggested to at least one studio, and we suspect more, that it could influence Critics Choice Awards voting in a way that led that studio to reach out to CCA and request that action be taken to protect the integrity of our awards." And I saw a lot of people that took that statement and said that the fix was in, that HCA members that were in Critics' Choice had swung the whole ceremony. They were looking at people that were in common and saying that, see, there was this block of people that were trying to corrupt the whole process. That, first of all, is not true, because I'm one of those members that was in both organizations, and I can tell you there was no mass group email that was sent out to all of us saying, hey, you should vote this way, we're all going to vote this way and try to swing the results. But I also understand, based off of that statement, why people might jump to extreme reactions, because that is a very serious allegation, and I took it very seriously, again, as a member of both groups. The Hollywood Creative Alliance, for its part, released its own statement yesterday saying, quote, At no time have we tried to influence the awards votes of our members or make any suggestion to talent or studios that we would or could exercise such influence. During our awards outreach to studios, networks, and personal representatives, we presented an opportunity to have their talent attend and or present at our ceremonies. During these conversations, we acknowledged that our awards ceremonies took place during a key voting period for various organizations and noted that several of our members belonged to several guilds and organizations. HCA ceremonies, just like other award shows, present studios, networks, and talent with a unique opportunity to promote their current and upcoming projects amongst our membership and the world at large. Now, this is not the vote-fixing scandal that a lot of people thought when they saw the initial statement from the Critics' Choice Organization, but I have to say, again, as a now former member of AHCA, I'm not entirely happy with what the Hollywood Creative Alliance is saying in this statement as well, because if I'm parsing the words, it's basically, no, we didn't try to fix the votes. No, we didn't tell our members how to vote, but we did in our communications with studios and reps to get people to show up at our awards ceremony say, well, you know, these ceremonies are happening while other groups like CCA are still doing their voting. And if your folks show up, then it could help them stay in the minds and the memories of our members and, you know, help them to promote, help your people to promote their movies. And that could perhaps help their chances. And, you know, listen, do I think that that was a quid pro quo thing where HCA was saying if they show up, that will happen? Personally, I don't, but I think it could very easily be interpreted that way. I think it's a very dumb thing to say, and I absolutely understand why a studio might flag that to Critics' Choice and say, hey, we kind of had this weird conversation. It kind of sounded like maybe they were telling us that if our talent showed up, that it could help their chances in your organization. And we need to make sure that that's not the case, because I can tell you, as much as a publicist or a studio or whatever might want somebody to win from their movie or from, you know, their the person that they represent, they want 10 times as much for it not to be something that turns out to be involved in some kind of a scandal or illegitimate in any way. That is 10 times the headache than anything else, than any great thing that could come from that person winning the award. There's no upside to winning a fixed contest, especially because if it's discovered, it makes the whole thing not worth it, and it is so much trouble. And so I absolutely understand why this was flagged towards Critics' Choice. And I understand why Critics' Choice took it so seriously. I can see the HCA saying, well, wait a minute, it's not as serious or as bad as, you know, it sounds, or as maybe they feel the Critics' Choice Association made it sound. But at the same time, it's just a dumb move. It's a dumb thing to say. I really wish, again, not even, I'm not a member of the organization anymore, but just as somebody in the critical community, I just think that that was some bad decision making. And honestly, and this is tough for me because I still have a lot of friends that are in the HCA. I really do think that this was Critics' Choice acting in the best interests of their members, of their awards, of the people that won those awards, who deserve to be seen as winners fair and square, and who don't deserve to have any sort of suspicion tied to those awards. I watched the Critics' Choice Awards. I was very happy with a lot of the winners. I didn't personally vote for all of them, but this is a year where no matter who wins, I'm generally going to be happy because I think it's been a great year for movies. And you don't need this sort of drama happening in the background. So it was a pretty easy decision for me to resign because I did continue to want to be associated with Critics' Choice. And also because with HCA, I respect the goals and the missions of that organization and what they stand for. There's really so many things about the organization that are great. And that's one of the reasons that I stayed with it. But there's only so long that you can sort of stay in an organization and hope for the best. And that's really what I'd been doing, was sitting there and kind of saying, like, I really hope that, you know, they can sort of get things on track. And I just got to the end of my rope. So there you have it. The most important thing that's happening in Hollywood right now, the drama between two different critics groups. The focus really should be on the award season and the Oscar nominations and all the great things that are going on right now to celebrate a great year in film in 2023. As I mentioned, my annual special about the Oscar nominations, where I pick my personal choices and who I think will get nominated, will be up in the next day or two. Be sure to keep a lookout for that. And then next week, I'll have my reactions to the Oscar nominations themselves, as well as movie news and reviews and box office and everything that we do here. Thank you to Mint Mobile and everybody that called into the Mint Mobile hotline. Thank you to Sean Chandler for coming in and talking movies with me. And thank you for spending part of your day right here. Until next time, stay safe, and I'll see you then. Bye.